It's time now for World Watchers International with Mae Brussel, who for over 17 years has investigated and exposed political conspiracies worldwide. World Watchers International originates at KLRB, Carmel, California. Here's Mae.
Good evening. This is Mae Brussel in Carmel, California, December the 28th, 1980, and this is broadcast number 473. I don't remember a time in the last 10 years that compared to the feeling that I'm having as this last Sunday broadcast on the end of 1980 is taking place, and we go into 1981 with the specter of Ronald Reagan and the CIA cabinet, vice president, and officials of the government from the intelligence community moving into the White House. The only thing I could compare my feeling to at this time is the despair I felt 10 years ago, and I'll go into some more of the John Lennon murder, but I want to tie in the situation 10 years ago because it's been a continuous pattern of America sliding downhill in the last 10 years. In 1970, I didn't feel like sending Christmas cards to my friends. I wasn't feeling jolly. And things were looking pretty bad in the world. So I decided to get out a small newspaper, about 12 pages, 14 pages, a little sheet, and send 1,000 copies to every member of Congress and to presidents of universities and the major news media and the various researchers. And in that paper, I had a column called Years of Sorrow and Despair. January 1970, 10 years ago, Richard Nixon was in the White House with John Mitchell, Spiro Agnew, vice president, and Robert Haldeman and John Ehrlichman and that gang around him. The Vietnam War was going strong. It was a year after Aldemont and the killing up there and the Gimme Shelter movie and the Charles Manson family, the counterintelligence operation, blaming the hippies and the musicians for the violence that was going to come down. It was the January after the Chappaquiddick affair, which knocked Ted Kennedy out of any possibility in the White House race in 1972. It was 1.5 years before Daniel Ellsberg published the Pentagon Papers, and 1.5 years before my first radio program on KLRB. I felt miserable. John Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, Martin Luther King, Malcolm X had all been murdered. So had Adlai Stevenson and Dag Hammarskjöld and Patrice Lumumba and all other people around them who were working on peace missions. So I wrote a column to various sections of our society in this New Year's greeting that I sent out. First column was called Facts and Evidence of the Conspiracy that Killed John Kennedy and How It Would Haunt Our American Political System Until That Murder Was Solved. The next was a column on the age of specialization, going into private researchers like myself spending these years into a matter such as the Kennedy assassination because the Justice Department and the law enforcement agencies refused to do it. The third column was a New Year greeting to Richard Nixon, saying that his future was linked to the truth of the John Kennedy assassination and that his future was shaky if he didn't come up and investigate more behind the murder and what he was doing in Dallas the night before and the morning that John Kennedy was murdered. Another column was called Coup d'etat for the Elite Bureaucrat, and I referred to the book by Edward Luttwak that I mentioned a few weeks ago on KLRB, and I talked about the Palace Revolution that took place in the United States and the coup d'etat in Dallas that changed hands in government, and referred to the think tank at George Washington University that is now behind Ronald Reagan. Another column was a blast at Lyndon Johnson and his appointed Warren Commission, and in there I mentioned Leon Jaworski, who went on to cover up the Korea Gate and the Senate Watergate hearings, and John J. McCloy, a member of the Warren Commission who set up the Seven Sisters Oil Combine that has raised our oil prices tremendously. He was official with the Chase Manhattan Bank. And I talked about the CIA and the assassination of John Kennedy and the Nazis that were protected by the Warren Commission, who were a major part of the assassination plans to kill the President of the United States. At a column, What Next, Senator Edward Kennedy, accusing him of false liberalism and obstructing justice and truth. Another one, What for Congress in 1970, referring to their impotence and their inability to move one way or the other. Another column on the Is There a Democratic Party, on the sellout of the Democratic Party, making this a one-party system. Nobody speaking up for the poor, for housing, employment, civil rights, and so forth. As of 1970, it would be downhill all the way with both parties looking alike. There was a column, Greeting to the News Media, regarding their major lies on all of the murders and the assassinations, and printing remarks about Spiro, from Spiro Agnew, attacking the youth in this country who were trying to point out some of the problems with the Pentagon in our society, and Agnew was putting them down. There was a column called Best Wishes to All Blacks in 1970, You Will Need It, and it warned about the increase of the Klan and the Nazis in this country, and from 1970 on down, their civil rights movement would be curtailed, and they would not have that mobility up the economic and social ladder they thought they would have. Another column, Good Luck to the Jews, Why Don't You Wake Up? And it had to do with articles of Drew Pearson on Nazis holding power in the United States and many quotations of the increase of Nazis in the United States. Then there was a section called Good Luck, Hippies, You Will Need It. And it had to do with the use of LSD and mind control and the breaking of the youth anti-war movement, which so successfully was wrapped up with the murder of John Lennon, to put the whole era in a package and bury it, or hopefully bury it once and for all. And then there was another column on the peace organizations and demonstrations for peace, and the role the Pentagon was taking against the protesters. And it's true, they were all photographed and put into data banks and identified for future use. Then I had a section called Couples to Watch. One was Governor Claude Kirk of Florida and his contacts with Ronald Reagan, their policies to break the University of California, and their links to Nazis and the Wackenhut Corporation. One on Pope Paul VI, who was Montini, the Secretary of the Vatican, who had written passports for Nazis to go to South America and Shanghai and all over the world, with H.L. Hunt. The couple of Svetlana Stalin and Marina Oswald, both working with the CIA to get their American citizenship, and the links of Spiro Agnew with the FBI and J. Edgar Hoover. And then concluding that news sheet that I had written, on the back, I had headlines from 1969, December, just at the end of the year, called Years of Sorrow and Despair. You read those headlines 10 years ago, and they don't sound much different than today. There was an Associated Press story, Jury Finds Incredible Misdeeds in High Places. Another story by Tom Wicker in the New York Times, Justice on Trial. Another New York Times article, Klan Leader Vows New White Supremacy Drive. The New York Times, James Reston, Who Will Investigate the Investigators on Political and Military Life and the Wrongdoing of the Pentagon. Another story, The Pentagon Accused of Tricking the Public. This is the Washington Post, December 1969. Another story by Roscoe and Jeffrey Drummond, December 1969, in the Washington Post, While the Nation Burns, Congress Fiddles. Another headline, Violence Cited as Internal Threat to America. This was December 15th, 1969. And then a Washington AP story, A Worried Look at the U.S. Image. World attitude towards the United States at the lowest point in 50 years. People abroad judge us on the basis of what we do rather than what we say. The most devastating impact came from the assassination of Senator Robert Kennedy and Dr. Martin Luther King this year. Yale President Brewster had a headline, Increased manipulation of society by the power blocks is linked to student unrest. And he talks about the students at Yale being put down by the power as they want to express their feelings about society and the war at that time. And finally, there was a headline story, quotations of C.P. Snow. This was in the New York Times, November 16th, 1969, titled, A Very Sad Situation, The Sage Finds the World. C.P. Snow said, I have been nearer to despair this year in 1968 than ever in my life. Everything that has happened in public has pointed in the direction of anti-hope. In 1967, one could feel it in the air. This year, one can see it. If I make you depressed, forgive me, because it's the facts that are depressing you, not me. For a brief period, one can even put a date on it. From 1962 to 1965, there seemed a realistic chance. Now it has become remote. Everything that has happened in this dark year has pushed it further away. We are all selfish. Political memory lasts about a week. Political foresight stretches about another week ahead. To stint ourselves to avoid disaster in 20 years, what body of people would ever do it? Signed by C.P. Snow. And that is the way I closed my brief news sheet that I sent out, as I say, 1,000 copies. And that was my contribution to my country and my feelings at the end, or the beginning, rather, of 1970. The reason I read it tonight, for several reasons, is that same kind of despair that I feel ushering in the new year is present, only it's 10 years later. And I see the young people in terrible state of shock about John Lennon being murdered. And we talked 3 weeks ago about who would kill John Lennon, the motives for killing him, and the doubles, and the machinery that sets in motion this type of assassination. And last week I gave you clues of the smoking gun in Georgia, Lebanon, Arkansas, Tennessee, Hawaii, Switzerland, his trips around the world, his high finances, and his training, with possible training in DeKalb County with the very people who killed John Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, and Martin Luther King. And I said this week I would talk about what can we do about it. But I noticed that, as C.P. Snow said, political memory lasts 1 week. Political foresight stretches another week ahead. Now, he asked the question, who would ever spend any time in anticipation of disaster 20 years ago? There are some researchers, like myself, who have worked for 17 years to avoid the things that we're going into now. The fact that our methods didn't work is because not enough people participated or believed that the time invested would be useful. And when you ask me, and what can I do about the John Lennon murder, the assassination, I have to ask you the question, how much time are you willing to invest? Are you willing to put the 1 week into it, the syndrome of the wailing wall? The Jews used to have the great wailing wall syndrome. They'd stand against the wall and beat their heads and knuckles and cry. And it was only when they turned around and looked their adversaries in the face, because it was either then or the ovens again, that they were able to build any kind of a country or a weapon system for defense or a system to go in and take hostages that have been taken from them, airplane kidnappings and so forth. Israel built an army, for better or for worse, and it probably is the best in the world today. When they stopped crying and reappraised what it takes to survive in this world, to meet your adversaries eyeball to eyeball, I have ideas of what we can do or what you can do, and I'll share some of them with you. But how many of you really would spend 8 or 10 years or 12 years on a project to find the truth? I'm dealing with a bunch of older people who've done research for many years, who are getting tired and depressed and have carried this burden a long time. And then the next jump is the pablum generation, the easy food, the quick open the jar and stuff their mouth, instant television with 7-minute intervals of commercials and solutions to problems within the half hour, the situation comedies, and the competition of all the various Farrah Fawcett's and the Bo Derricks. How can this generation concentrate enough? Will you be able to, and are you willing to? If you ask, what can we do about the murder of John Lennon, I have to ask the question, how much time are you willing to invest into the project? How much hurt do you feel that being ripped off of 30 or 40 musicians? If five of them were murdered as a cold-blooded plan, that's bad enough, as I've said before. If 20 of them were murdered, or 40 of them, heaven help us, because that many politicians and lawyers and witnesses to trials are being murdered simultaneously. And is this generation smart enough to be consistent, to not drop out of the battle? I really don't know. You ask me, what can you do? And I have to ask you these questions. Can you stay with it long enough? Can you give up a television movie? Could you give up a party if there was a meeting to discuss these things? Somebody in town has offered a space to have discussions on what to do and to form groups. I've never worked with a body of people before for several reasons. One, the ratio of agents that infiltrate us is one agent for every five people. There are people that break up the meetings. You have to argue on divergent opinions. The decisions aren't made to the people who did all the research, but others come to argue with you, and the groups break up. I saw it many, many times in New York at the Elgin Theater, at colleges where I lectured, at small groups that wanted to come to solutions about assassinations. We had provocateurs. We had them in the GI Coffee House out in Seaside during the anti-war movement. We had them when we were fighting the Cambodian bombings, or the Kent State meetings when we were opposing those. Every discussion group was infiltrated or broken up with people who wanted divergent attitudes projected into the room to break the discussion, and nobody went away satisfied, and the groups broke up. Would you be psychologically secure enough to do research or to have discussion groups and have people in who agree with you and drop those people that don't have the same feelings as you? When you get into this kind of research, you not only invest your time, you have to be tough-skinned. You have to ferret out people that you think are negative. You have to take the opinion of people that you formerly liked who tell you you're crazy. You have to be willing to slough off relatives, former friends, and all kinds of people to really get to the basic facts of survival and how to find out who is doing these murders. You have to invest time in reading and thinking, and you have to be secure in your own self. You can't take the opinions of other people or their definition of you or diagnosis of your mental state as anything but their opinion. And most people aren't that secure. They want me to tell them how to do research and how to become politically active, but they're not secure enough in their own selves to have people over and discuss these things, or to not see any more people that don't want to discuss these things. I know myself that when I started working on the John Kennedy assassination, I had friends that I thought were liberal. I thought they were intelligent. I realized that they actually had Nazi mentalities and were very conservative and didn't really want to make changes in society or know who killed John Kennedy and later Robert Kennedy or Martin Luther King. They only acted liberal on the surface, but when it was down to the push and shove, they wouldn't write to a public official, and they had every excuse there was in the books. They came out with kind of excuses. Well, you know, it really wouldn't be a conspiracy because too many people would be behind it. I'm sure the Justice Department and the Police Department will look into it. You know, we can't fight City Hall. We'll never learn the truth of these matters. Why couldn't a loner have killed John Kennedy or Robert Kennedy or Martin Luther King or John Lennon? Don't you think that there are crazies out there? Let the organizations do it for me. I'll send money to Philip Agee or the NAACP and let them find out who killed Martin Luther King. These are some of the arguments that intelligent people use as an excuse for their not having to invest time. They say, I don't have time to investigate the murders. There's too much to read. I'm all alone. I don't know anybody who shares my feelings. They're not willing to throw off those friends and family and take on people who agree to search further, but they prefer to be alone among a lot of people who don't want to know what's going on. Other people say, and rightfully so, that investigations brings surveillance and bugging and wiretapping and probably investigation by the IRS. That part is true. There are dangers in asking snoopy questions, but there's also danger in not asking snoopy questions, because what wasn't asked 10 years ago didn't solve the problems. The headlines from 1969 sound just like 1970 sound like 1980, only they're even worse because now we're economically in a depression. We have inflation. The home prices are out of reach. There's rampant unemployment. The whole series of peace people have been knocked out. The musicians have been killed off. Things are worse now. The hostages have been held in Iran, and this country is at a stalemate. Uranium and atomic weapons have been dispersed to many countries, Israel, Pakistan, South Africa, Argentina, because those headlines were not taken seriously in 1970. We have worse headlines in 1980. My feeling has always been that if there's a danger in surveillance and wiretapping, and my phone is tapped and my mail is opened, it's going to be worse later. What they're going into now is electronic mail, where you send a letter and they transcribe it and deliver it in the next city. And you don't have the privacy of your own mail. They don't want to return your own check stubs to you. They want to keep them for you and know where your money goes and who it goes to. So there are problems, but you have to ask yourself, how much do you want to put into discussion groups or meetings to really come to solutions of these problems? I know that if television had been invented before the czars were kicked out in Russia, the czars would still be in power today. And if the United States government, RCA, and General Electric had sent electricity and television to Vietnam prior to getting into the war in Southeast Asia, the North and South Vietnamese would belong to the United States, and we wouldn't have had to spend any more money than television sets. We could have given them I Love Lucy, All in the Family, and various situation comedies and kept them pacified. Now, this generation has its television, its TV guides, and its, as I say, its instant solutions and a choice for everybody. If you don't want 96 this year, you'll get 69 next year. It doesn't matter what they call it. They're tantalizing you with situations and stories that are diverting you from the really quiet thought it takes with other people to solve these crimes that I have done along with other people and other researchers. I know that by the Christmas cards I get and the messages I get that I have reached a lot of people in the past years, but I didn't just reach it because I thrashed around in a temper tantrum and said, I want to find out who killed John Kennedy. I sat many lonely hours for 8 years just cross-filing the Warren Commission hearings before I realized the network and the framework of such political assassinations. And that 8-year investment in that study taught me how to approach things like the murder of John Lennon and the other assassinations that followed after John Kennedy was killed. How many hours a week would you be willing to invest in your future for the next 10 years or 20 years that C.P. Snow wrote about? There's 24 hours in a day times 7. I figure it's 168 hours you start out with. And all you need is 7 hours sleep, which is 49 hours, which leaves you 119 hours. If you work 8 hours a day, 7 days a week, that would be 56 hours, and you're left with 63 hours. And you can do thinking when you're driving, going to and from work. I even keep a tablet on the seat of the car. I listen to talk shows and have a pencil. Now, if I wait in line at the bank, I have a paperback book. Or if I wait at the cashier stand at the grocery store, I pull out a book and read a little bit, such as Reinhard Gehlen's books on espionage and the master spy. And if you spend 10 hours a week shopping and repairing, going to the shoe repair or the TV shop to get parts or a tube or whatever you have to do, 10 hours of shopping a week, and you can't do much more with inflation or you'll be broke, that's still 53 hours left. And in those 53 hours, would you spend 5 hours a week reading a book, writing to a public person, writing to the news media, to Barbara Walters, Walter Cronkite, Phil Donahue, and your congressmen, your senators, and telling them what you know about these murders? Would you write to them and say, I want to investigate these program zombies. I want to do away with that insanity plea of the white-collar crime when public officials are killed, such as the Dan White, or in this case, John Lennon murder. I want to find the hospitals and doctors who treat these people. I'm talking about Dennis Sweeney, who killed Alan Lowenstein, and the Charles Manson episodes in prison or in hospitals, or the mind control of Sirhan Sirhan and the visits and the people they associated with, or this Mark David Chapman and David Berkowitz, the son of Sam. I could do a litany of mind-controlled zombies. Why don't we put these on a computer and see the names of the doctors who treat the same people, like David Berkowitz and now this Chapman fellow who killed John Lennon? What about the IRS? Shouldn't they investigate the finances of the mothers, the brothers, the wives who supply the money, the modus operandi that stay in the background, who aren't seen? Chapman's mother disappeared from Hawaii the day that John Lennon was killed. She'd given her son the money for the trip along with his wife. She works for Sears Roebuck. She hasn't been seen since. She helped buy his art collection worth thousands of dollars. Would you write and ask to locate the missing evidence? The logbook that Chapman allegedly signed in Hawaii is missing. The album with his fingerprints that John Lennon allegedly signed is missing. Who had the coat thrown over their face the time John Lennon was killed? Why is the physical evidence missing? Would it all fit together, or did they have a patsy they were going to pull in and supply a false motive? Again, going back to the doubles, where does all this missing evidence go to? And also, let's publish the passports of these people, such as the SLA, Emily and William Harris and Angela Atwood, and various people in these conspiracies. What countries do they go to? Sirhan Sirhan, Lee Harvey Oswald, we know he's down in Mexico and over in Europe with the Soviet Union and the Navy intelligence. But this Chapman fellow trips around the world, London, Switzerland. Where else did they go? What were their tax records? How much did they have, making $4 an hour and living in a very expensive apartment with expensive art collections and so forth? Find the money, find the travels, find the hospitals and the doctors, and you pretty well can put together how these people are moved like robots by the intelligence community. But are you willing to spend 53 hours of the week out of that leisure time, whatever else you do with those hours? Can you spend 3 or 4 hours a week? 1 hour listening to KLRB, 1 hour making writing for a insert with the references, the sources of information, a discussion group, maybe an hour and a half a week where you talk about these matters and decide who will write to which public officials, or call talk shows, radio talk shows, and send letters to the editor. There are some very conservative people in town here that once every 30 days they send a letter to the editor. You see their names. That's how often you can write in. Maybe we should have a concerted letter-writing campaign where each one of us writes once a month with our views. I haven't sent many letters to the editor because I felt that my work on KLRB reached enough people. But there's some people that don't listen to KLRB who do read the newspaper. And maybe we should plan ways to act or move to get this information out. There are all kinds of excuses for not doing research, and as I say, I've listed them, but there are all kinds of reasons why this information should be disseminated. We can't hope too much on the young people. They're in college, they're out dating, they're worrying about whether he loves her, whether she loves him, where they're going to get a job, where they're going to go to school. The important thing about accumulating this information is that you can throw it to public officials and expect them to move, and if they don't, keep a record of your letters and later trace their activities and accuse them of covering this up. Letters should go to the Justice Department, to the New York Police Department, and if you're interested, I have a list of addresses where you can write and save your letters, and we can try to force people to become aware through letters and calls, use this information, and be aware that these zombie robots are created for specific murders and that the murders could be solved once and for all when we get angry enough to demand that they be solved. This is the end of the first 30 minutes. I'm going to take a one-minute break and come back with you with some more ideas on the John Lennon and other murders.
This concludes the first half of World Watchers International with Mae Brussel. We will return with the second half after a brief pause.